the headlines this hour. President Obama hints at boosting the U.S. military role in Yemen following media hype over two suspicious packages. A bomb attack in Iraq's central Diyala province claims dozens of lives. Bahraini opposition detainees say they have been tortured and coerced into confessions.
It is 7 p.m. in Washington, D.C., and 3 a.m. in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. This is Press TV's World News.
Many thanks for joining us this hour. Well, the U.S. president says initial examinations of two packages bound for the United States showed they appeared to contain explosive materials.
Barack Obama has hinted at boosting the U.S. military role in Yemen, where Washington says the packages came from.
And President Saleh pledged the full cooperation of the Yemeni government in this investigation. Going forward, we will continue to strengthen our cooperation with the Yemeni government to disrupt plotting by al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and to destroy this al-Qaeda affiliate. We'll also continue.
Obama says the parcels were destined for Jewish places of worship in Chicago. They were found on two cargo planes in Britain and Dubai. One of them had white powder on it, as well as wires and a circuit board. It also contained a toner cartridge. The scare has led to increased searches of cargo planes and trucks in several U.S. cities. For more on that, we're now joined by Jeff Steinberg, who's with the Executive Intelligence Review, who joins us on the line from Washington. Mr. Steinberg, as always, thank you for joining our broadcast. Now, it seems before any elections, the U.S. always seems to be targeted by what turns out to be a non-threat. When Robert Gibbs was asked if this was a ploy to win elections, he dodged the question, but did say Americans mustn't change travel plans regardless of this. I'd like to get your view on that.
Well, I share your skepticism. I don't have any inside details as of yet in terms of discussions with people in the national security community here who are not part of the Obama team. So I can't say what exactly is the level of seriousness or threat legitimately associated with this incident. But what I can say is it is very suspicious, coming several days before the election, very reminiscent of how the Bush team used the September 11th, 2001 attacks to push a police state policy through on the basis of scaring the American people. Of course, it's also just 24 hours before a big rally is scheduled to take place in Washington, D.C., hosted by Jon Stewart, the Comedy Central news guy who made Obama look like a total fool on national television just a few days ago. And we're looking at increasing desperation from the White House. We have growing reports from people on the inside that the president is in a psychological meltdown. My own boss, Mr. LaRouche, has basically said that it's time to invoke Section 4 of the 25th Amendment on the issue of whether he's mentally fit to stay in office. And so is there a possibility that this is being hyped way beyond significance, or that it's some kind of a dummy incident in the first place? I honestly cannot rule that out in the least, given the state of mind, the state of desperation of the president, the likelihood they're going to suffer a gigantic electoral defeat on Tuesday in the election.
Right. Now, many Democrats have questioned funding for intelligence services and the wars. Now, with current applause about how Obama knew of this because of quote-unquote good intelligence and he reacted immediately, does this feed into what is blind trust in the national security policy and continued funding for the wars?
Well, it's even more than that, because Obama campaigned very heavily on the idea that he would roll back some of the dictatorial excesses of the Bush-Cheney administration. And almost immediately upon coming into office, Obama decided that some of these unitary executive powers are pretty good. And he not only broke his campaign promise to do things like shut down the Guantanamo Bay prison and roll back some of the illegal surveillance of American citizens. He's actually accelerated and intensified some of those programs, and we may very well see even a further push towards these kinds of dictatorial measures as the result of this incident reported tonight. I mean, it's highly unusual for the President of the United States, just literally moments after a news account like this, to go on national television and be the first person to speak about it. We have national security agencies, we have Homeland Security, we have the FBI. This is normally where you would have had the initial statements and descriptions of the incident, not the President of the United States grabbing the bully pulpit to basically push his authority.
Right. Now, it's being said that this was a dry run, much like what Al-Qaeda did before 9/11, as in checking the strength of U.S. security. Now, in a U.S. that is already overrun by almost obsessive Islamophobia, what will this do towards Americans viewing their Muslim co-citizens with suspicion?
Well, there's clearly a danger of that. I mean, we had this big flap just about a week and a half ago with one of the National Public Radio regular commentators, Juan Williams, being fired because he made a misspeak comment. So, I mean, this is very much something that's been being built up for a very, very long time. This is not something new. I trace it back to the 1970s when Bernard Lewis started talking about the arc of crisis and became practically a publicist for Osama bin Laden, building up this Islamophobia here in the United States. So all of this is part of something that we've been seeing playing out over some times, and shamefully, President Obama seems to have really grabbed the bit and is running with this right now.
All right, Mr. Steinberg, we will have to leave it there for now. That was Jeff Steinberg with the Executive Intelligence Review joining us on the line from Washington. Sir, as always, we do appreciate your comments here at Press TV.
Well, in other news, a bomb attack has killed at least 25 people in the central Iraqi province of Diyala. Another 70 people have been wounded in the blast. The bomb went off at a coffee house in the city of Baladruz in central Iraq. No group has taken responsibility for the attack yet. Press TV will obviously be updating you on the story as details pour in.
U.S.-led foreign forces in Afghanistan are continuing their massive military operation in the southern province of Kandahar. NATO forces are carrying out airstrikes in areas they claim are Taliban strongholds. The alliance says at least 20 militants have been killed during their operations in Kandahar. But some reports from the villages suggest the strikes have left extensive damage to civilian properties. More than 150,000 foreign troops are stationed in Afghanistan, claiming they're fighting to restore security to the country. But a new opinion poll shows that the majority of Afghans mistrust the U.S.-led forces and remain pessimistic about the outcome of the war. They blame foreign forces for violence and insecurity in their country.
Iran has said it welcomes the return of the P5+1 group of countries to talks. A reply letter by the head of the Office of Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says talks can be held as of November the 10th. It stresses the holding of talks on the basis of a July 6th letter sent by Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council to the EU foreign policy chief. The letter says talks will be held in a place and on a date convenient to both sides. The group P5+1 includes permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany.
Well, during their trial session, Bahrain's opposition detainees have described the torture they were subjected to since their arrest by the government.
A week after Bahrain's general elections, the High Criminal Court started the trial of 27 opposition members, mostly Shias, arrested on charges of planning to topple the government. In a mass hearing with 25 defendants present in court, all but one of the defendants told the judge about the severe torture, sexual harassments, assaults, and ill treatments they had suffered at the hands of Bahraini forces while in detention. They made their statements despite repeated cautions to keep quiet. Speaking to the court, one of the opposition members, Al-Sheikh Mohammed Habib Al-Muqdad, said,
They used electric shocks. My eyes were blindfolded and my hands tied behind my back. I was not allowed to sleep for the first 5 or 6 days. I was beaten severely and hung. The torture marks are still on my body today. Due to the severity of the beatings on my head and ears, both my eardrums have been torn.
Other opposition detainees have said,
one of my fingernails was removed and another removed in the hospital. The signs and effects of torture are still very clear.
I was subjected to torture and I'm now in solitary confinement. I was bitten on my legs and hands and sprayed with hot and cold water. I was given electric shocks and after denying all charges at the public prosecution, I was tortured on the bus. I want a guarantee that I will not be tortured again and that I will be removed from solitary confinement.
Dr. Abdul-Jalil Al-Singais, a well-known figure among the opposition, told the court that Bahraini forces threatened to rape his immediate family members. The judge has adjourned the next trial session to the 11th of November, after ordering medical tests for 5 defendants to verify their torture accusations.
According to the Torture Redux report published by Human Rights Watch, they found that actually there were reports of torture happening since 2007. They actually found that torture had returned as something systematic in Bahrain.
On Thursday, Bahrain's High Criminal Court charged the opposition detainees with what the court has called forming an illegal organization and spreading false information. Their indictment also includes resorting to terrorism and financing terrorist activities. However, there's been no mention of the charge of attempting to overthrow the government. In the statements presented to the court, opposition detainees rejected all charges and said they were forced to sign confessions at the prosecutor's office. It remains to be seen what Bahrain's High Criminal Court will decide on the government's charges against the activists and the opposition's counter-allegations of torture and disrespect for human rights.
The death toll from the tsunami that hit remote islands in Indonesia earlier this week has risen to 413. Officials say around 300 people are still missing. The tsunami hit islands off the west coast of Sumatra on Monday. Rescuers say they are providing medical assistance and shelter to hundreds of people. The huge wave was triggered by a 7.7 magnitude earthquake. Meanwhile, Mount Merapi has erupted once again. Locals say the latest explosion was even more powerful and louder than the eruption that killed dozens of people earlier this week. Hundreds of people have begun fleeing their homes as the volcano continues to erupt.